Still got old arthritis with me. Kind of hard to get around, but appreciate you asking me to help and fill in. I feel a little amiss with Brother Bobby being sitting right here in front of me. He's such a great speaker. Probably the last three lessons, I've been trying to give you ways in which you can search and get a lesson if you would be desirous to give one. If you remember, a couple of months ago, I gave one on the rich man and Lazarus, which is the last half of Luke 16. The one this morning, I said, has a basis of what will your answer be? And this is a song on page 284. And in tonight, this is notes I have taken from a sermon many, many years ago, probably when we attended Abilene Christian College. And I have no apology for it. Brother Bobby, a couple of weeks ago, gave comments about from Brother Winkler. That's good. Take somebody that you really trust what they say. My lesson tonight is teaching by personal example. When I go somewhere, I like to take notes. The last time we went to Tulsa workshop, I took down these notes. What Jesus did, the apostles did, the early church did, and we should too. Just as true as can be. Brother Bailey started out his lesson by saying this is sometimes called a power age. An age when machines can lift huge weights, when they can calculate thousands of times faster than man. We have jets that zoom across the sky, much faster than the speed of sound. An age where one single bomb can destroy an entire city. You have lately the cell phones and computers and all kinds of gadgets that I wouldn't even want to try to work on in the Christmas store now. But Brother Bailey said that there's a power greater than all of these, and that's a power that affects human influence, affects the soul of man. That power is human influence. You know, I intend to bring a mirror with me. A little mirror is something that can be very small, yet it can reflect the sunlight for miles and miles. And that suggests to me that our lives are somewhat like that little mirror. Something we do can affect somebody miles away. Every act we do affects the souls of men. Sometimes good, sometimes bad, sometimes great, sometimes small. I'm told that in the state of Ohio, there stands a courthouse in such a location that the raindrops that fall on the north side of it end up in the Great Lakes. The raindrops that fall on the south side of it into the Mississippi and then on down to the Gulf of Mexico. So just as a little puff of wind can change the destiny of a raindrop for 1,500 miles or more, you and I affect somebody else. Probably eternity alone will tell us just how much influence we've had on somebody else's life. We know there's different ways to influence people. We know that the word of mouth, the printed page, television, and radio. But probably the most potent way of influencing another person is a personal example. Brother Bailey said, people may forget everything you say, but they'll not forget you. You can think back of people you knew many years ago. You don't remember a thing they said, probably, but you remember them. One act, therefore, is worth 1,000 words. Brother Bailey said, example is better than precept and worth twice as much as advice. So, yes, what is example? Go to Webster's Dictionary, and it says that is what is taken out of a larger quantity, such as a sample, that which is to be followed, imitated, a pattern, or a model. You know, one can be a sample, a pattern, a model for something bad as well as something good. Every person, therefore, teaches by personal example. I'm sure some people say, oh, I'm not an example to anyone. But you're mistaken. You do influence somebody. I remember in high school English, I want to say Robert Burns, who said, oh, for the gift that God would give us to see ourselves as others see us. I only pronounced it a little different than that. Your shadow is always under your feet. At noon is short. In the afternoon or morning, it's way out there. Our influence is the very same way. Sometimes it's just short, and sometimes it goes a long ways. Paul was certainly right when he said, none of us liveth to herself, and no man dieth to himself. Romans 14:7. Samuel Johnson once said, neither our virtues nor our voices are our own because of others' response to them. We cannot keep them to ourselves. So just one act that we do may turn the tide for another person's life. Probably most definitely if it's an endless inspirational conversation. But then, on the other hand, how about just a smile? You can remember people that every time you see them, they're smiling. You can remember people that every time you see them, they're frowning too, can't you? A kind deed, especially in times of sorrow and illnesses. A few hours of hospitality. A small compliment may affect someone. Now, in the negative way, a pessimistic comment, some smutty remark, few words of gossip, even just being too preoccupied to be friendly, and of course many more ways, will affect somebody the wrong way. I'm told that even the tiniest of hair casts a shell. And I know I don't have much hair, but then I'm told that it casts a shadow. So, the smallest act, what I'm trying to say, is an example of some sort. You might not realize some little small act that you've done affects somebody else. Realizing the power of example, the Bible is filled with incidents of people. In order that we may clearly see the lives of others and the lesson that their lives gives us, we have the concrete example of repentance in Luke 15, in the story about the prodigal son. We have many examples of conversions to Christ in the Bible. We have example of faith in the person of Abraham. We have example of patience in the person of Job. We have example of righteousness in the person of Noah. We have the true meaning of boldness and courage when we read about Daniel and the three Hebrew children. And of course, a lesson on neighborliness when we read about the Good Samaritan. Those are just a few. There's many more. When we think about Christ, sometimes we're more impressed with the life that he lived than the words that he said. In fact, it's what he did that gave power to the words that he said. The old saying is, he practiced what he preached. Luke begins the book of Acts by referring to Acts 1:1, the things that Jesus began both to do and to teach. In Hebrews 5, 8 through 9, we read, "Though he were a son, yet he learned obedience by the things that he suffered. And being made perfect, he became the author of eternal salvation unto them that obey him." So not only did Jesus teach obedience to others, he was obedient himself. You think of the great qualities that Jesus possessed, it's easy to understand why his teaching carried so much weight. Jesus had loving compassion. He had, or I should say, he was never too tired, too busy to help somebody, too busy to listen. It was not Jesus' desire to be served, but to serve others. There's never any partiality on his part. And I'd suggest that not until we pattern our lives after Christ can we be the right pattern. I think this is why Paul stands out when he could say, "Brethren, be followers together of me, and mark them which walk so that they have an example for us." Philippians 3:17. Also in writing to the Philippians, Paul said, "These things which I have both received and heard and seen in me, do, and the God of peace will be with you." Then in Titus 2:7-8, "In all things showing thyself an example of good work, in doctrine showing uncorruptness, gravity, sound speech that cannot be condemned, and he that is the contrary part may be ashamed, having no evil to say against us." Oh, that's really true. We need to work every day to try to improve just a little more. That should be one of our goals. Someone by the name of Clark once said, "The most terrible of lies is not one that is uttered, but one that is lived." There's a lot of truth there. The very moment you or I or anyone else start telling somebody about Christianity, what do? They look at you 6 days a week to see if you mean what you say on the seventh. Brother George Bailey said, "Preaching or teaching without practice is like going into battle with only blank ammunition." I think probably the best sermon is one that's lived and not preached. Jesus said, "Not everyone that saith unto me, Lord, Lord, shall enter the kingdom of heaven, but he that doeth the will of my Father which is in heaven." Again, he said, "Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven." Matthew 5:16. You and I are supposed to be a living demonstration of the working of God's power in our lives. What greater evidence of Christianity could men have than a good life lived for Christ? Christianity is better demonstrated than debated, so it isn't only what you say, but what you do that counts. A Christian must be the kind of person that makes it easier for others to live a Christian life. And this one I like real well. Brother George Bailey said, merely sitting in a church building will no more make you a Christian than sitting in a hen house will make you a hen. I've heard that over and over, but the first time I heard it was about 50 years ago by Brother George Bailey. You know, we lessen the force of a powerful sermon on what the Bible means to us in our private lives when we show little or no evidence of personal study. One has no right, I would suggest, in his teaching to ask others to do what he's not willing to do. You know, our teaching may demand respect, but only by personal example can we command respect. Brother George Bailey, I'm sorry, I got tears in my eyes when I heard this the first time, and I have tears in my eyes when I tell it. Brother George Bailey tells a story about a lady that went to New York City. He saw there a little ragged, cold, shivering girl, gazing wistfully in the shop window. She went over to see what she was doing, and she's looking at the cakes and the cookies there in the window. The lady said, "I knew that a good meal would be better for this little girl, but I took her in and bought her some cakes and cookies. Then I took her next door to a clothing store and bought her some new clothes. When we got outside, the little girl looked her up in the eye and said, 'Are you God's wife?'" That's what we claim to be, isn't it? Christ's bride. Concrete example right there. Christ's bride. You know, we shouldn't have to ever tell somebody that we're Christians. Our actions just show that relationship. I knew a girl one time. I suggested to her that it wasn't a good idea to go to the 71 Club. I told you how old it was. And dance. She said, "Well, they don't know I'm a Christian." Why not? Of course, going to the 71 Club, you probably wouldn't want them to know you're a Christian. But your neighbor is constantly looking at you to see if your life is the reality for which you claim. The Lord tells us that the man who hears the words and doeth them is like him who built his house upon a rock. And when the rain descended and the flood came, the winds blew and the house stood. Matthew 7. Oh, starting at verse 24. I believe that Jesus is trying to tell us that a Christian life can withstand the winds and storms of Satan. You know, one can question your arguments about Christianity. You cannot question the fact that you're a good example. And here's something I hope that you remember, if you remember nothing else. One of Satan's greatest comforts is to find a person who believes in Christ, but who does not live like Christ. Let me read that one more time. One of Satan's greatest comforts is to find a person who believes in Christ, but does not live like Christ. In Acts chapter 9, shortly after Paul is introduced to us, we know that he was on his road to Damascus with letters, what we would call today arrest warrants, to arrest those men or women in the letters or in the synagogues or wherever he could find them of the way. What was the way? How was he going to identify these people? They're not going to be like the Muslim wearing a certain garb or diaper on their head or whatever. They're not going to have a tattoo or like the Indians have a red dot there or something, or the Indians from India. No, the answer is obvious. Christians just have a way about them. In like manner, when Jesus was arrested, Peter and John were not known by their accusers, but they could quickly see that they had been with Jesus in Acts 4, about verse 13, I think. In what specific way, then, are we examples? If you will, turn to 1 Timothy 4:12. It brings out 6 points here. 1 Timothy 4:12. Most of the time I don't give you time to look it up, but this one I'm going to. Well, this brings 6 points I want you to think about. Be thou an example of the believers in word, conversation, charity or love, in spirit, in faith, and in purity. Notice these 6 things. The first word suggests how carefully we've got to be with our speech. Now, this rules out every foul word, every word of gossip, every word of slander, every idle word, and the curse words. That's one of my hate the words. But it does embrace words of wisdom, kindness, sympathy, counseling, teaching, and encouragement, doesn't it? Solomon said, a word fitly spoken is like apples of gold and pitchers of silver, Proverbs 25:11. In other words, he's trying to say they're out of place. The second word we'll study is conversation, which really means conduct or general deportment or manner of life. But this also means that this conduct, this manner of life at home, away from home, at work, at play, on vacation, anywhere, in times of prosperity or poor. But man's life in Philippians 1:7 must be as it becometh the gospel. The third thing suggests that we should be examples in love. We're studying a little bit of that in Romans 13 now, and if you study 1 Corinthians 13, you'll get the same suggestion. You know, it's easy to love somebody that loves you back, don't it? It's so easy to. But this includes showing love to someone who's wronged you, who's hurt you, who's spoken to hurt you even. That's hard to do sometimes. I know people who go out of the way in a grocery store to miss somebody because they don't want to speak to them. Because back in 1950, they said something a bit against me. You follow what I mean? That's wrong. Who's it hurting the worst? The person that doesn't want to forgive and forget? To manifest love, you cannot be envious, for love envies not. You cannot be quick-tempered, for love is not provoked. You cannot be suspicious, nor can we judge others, for love believeth all things and hopeth all things. To be a good example, one must owe no man anything but to love one another, Romans 13:8. In the fourth place, Paul told Timothy we should be examples in spirit. Now this includes the atmosphere that surrounds you, your passions, your meekness, your attitude of forgiveness, your disposition in general. Then be thou an example in faith in 2 Thessalonians 3:7. In times of doubt, times of trial, uncertainty, discouragement, our lives must show unshaken confidence. Lastly, or the sixth place, Paul suggests purity. This has got to begin in the heart. We must be pure in thought and in motives. As a man thinketh in his heart, so is he, Proverbs 23:7. I heard one time someone say that your soul has dyed the color of your thinking. You know, you cannot be a good example and pretend one thing and intend another. It won't last very long. The Christian life of purity manifests itself in honesty, even in the little tiny things. There's a large area there covered in Paul's admonition to Timothy, in word, in conversation, in love, in spirit, in faith, in purity. You and I have got to be examples as husbands or wives, children, especially school children, school teachers, church leaders, business people, farmers, neighbors, whatever. This simply means that our lives has to be a good pattern at all times, in all places, always,